Before we begin, I would like to emphasize that this podcast is separate from my teachings and work at Del Seton Medical Center. Any discussions we have on this podcast is for entertainment purposes only and in no way connected to Del Seton Medical Center.
Two vascular surgeons walk into a bar and come out with a podcast. We are talking everything vascular and not. Welcome to the Life of Flow podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another podcast of The Life of Flow. Today, we had the pleasure of sitting down here in Mexico City during Hendola 2023 with our good friend, Jill Somerset. Jill is an RVT. She's also the director of imaging and the director of Hope Academy and the Hope Vascular and Podiatry Institute in Houston, Texas. And today, we kind of discussed a little bit about the importance of the vascular technologists in the team and how the multidisciplinary approach is not only for physicians, but all the people around you that help care for these patients with chronic limb-threatening ischemia and other more complex disease conditions. So I hope you enjoyed it. It's a small show, but it's one full of great vignettes.
All right.
Let's do it.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Life of Flow. Our vascular podcast that deals with everything vascular and not. This is your host, Dr. Miguel Manchero Baker, with my phenomenal amigo, co-host,
Lucas Ferrer.
And today, this is part of the series of our podcasts, actually not on American soil. We are in Mexico City today, and it's a very magical time because this is their yearly Hendolat meeting, which we've both together helped put and develop throughout the last 10 years. And it's cool because you know, when you're the chair of a meeting, you just invite your friends. And that's kind of like the coolest thing about this meeting. If you ever want to come and hang with us and you think you're part of this tribe, come on down, come to Mexico City next year and just meet our friends because they're all phenomenal faculty. But I also love that I'd say every one of the people that are on the podium, I also call sometimes to just talk about shit. And that's why we actually made this podcast, because we love having these discussions and Zoom conversations. And today we have a very special friend with us, Jill Somerset. Bienvenida a Mexico.
It's good to see you both. Thank you so much for the invitation to be here on this podcast. And I love coming to Mexico City for Hendolat.
Jill is a... He's a good friend of the Hendolat branch. He's been coming for now a couple of years, but also a very inspiring woman that has put so much forth in our specialty. As an RVT, broken out of the mold, I would say, I think, in the sense that she has made herself present, part of the conversation, part of the team, and has, in my very personal view, has dramatically changed the way that I view the relationship with the technologist, which is interesting because it's not every part in the world has the RVT model. Yeah. It's something that in many other places in the world doesn't exist. I mean, I trained in Costa Rica. I also trained in Germany. None of those countries have RVTs. It doesn't exist.
Who does the ultrasound?
The physician.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. So in here in Mexico, there's no RVTs. Everyone, as you see, this is an interesting thing. The market for ultrasound is huge. And all of vascular surgeons here are the ones that do their own ultrasounds. And so they're kind of trying to get their own answers.
Yeah.
And so maybe that could be, you know what, I kind of threw a topic before we started, but I'm just going to take it this other way because I think this is kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, this kind of model of the RVT part of the CLTI team, and how do you bring that model together, and how do we grow these toe and flow models outside of the US? And I know that you've had some experience because you've actually come here, and I know that when you come here, you're training physicians because there's no RVTs to train. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's start from the top. You, where you worked, how did you get involved in the CLTI thing? And when did you say, I need to, it's baloney, I need to be part of this, I need to understand this, and I want to be part of the team? So walk us through how you got there.
Yeah, so my history is I have a bachelor's degree in biology. I was going to go into either veterinary medicine or dental hygiene, and I kind of fell into vascular ultrasound in Seattle, Washington, and was trained in Seattle. And I did just regular vascular ultrasound for a couple decades. And in 2000...
So meaning you clock in, you do ultrasounds, you clock out.
You scan in a dark room, and you barely interact with surgeons and physicians. Now, I did train under a vascular surgeon, so I did have that relationship, which was very helpful, but it was still pretty light. And, you know, we're kind of just taught to do a protocol. We do our report and we move on, and there's never any follow-up. And then I moved to Oregon, and then I worked with 4 vascular surgeons who actually were very inclusive of the vascular lab. And I built a relationship with them that was really close. I went into the OR and the cath lab, and they really brought me in. But a lot of it is because I was bored.
I was so bored. I don't think I'm going to call BS on that they brought you in.
Or maybe I asked to be brought in.
I'm pretty sure you made your way, because it's not the typical for us as vascular surgeons that we feel we got to include everybody in the team and the decision making in the OR. That's not the way we think about things. So I think you were the one poking the bear. I'm sure maybe you started very
gently,
you know, poking. Gently. Yeah.
But then I kind of crept in and was always in their office looking at correlation, looking at angios. Mm. And yeah, you're probably right. Good call out. From there, I kind of took that open door and I asked to build a limb salvage program at Peace Health from the grassroots. It wasn't sponsored or asked upon me. I just built a limb salvage program with the surgeons hand in hand. And for 5 years, we built this program where we met once a month for 5 years, every Friday, and we had a roundtable discussion. This is before PAT. So I'm already now immersed in CLTI.
What are you discussing in these meetings?
So it was, I would do 3 case presentations and involve podiatry, wound care, vascular surgery, IR, interventional cardiology, ID, and I would do all of the work, stay up till midnight putting these cases together, get the buy-in from everyone. I'm going to cover your case. I would really like your, you know, participation. I had industry support these meetings, so lunch was always free. Mm. And gosh, we had like 30 people show up every month to these meetings. And what it did is we were all working on our silos, and it allowed us to all work together. And I thrived on it. I loved it.
That was within one institution.
One institution.
So you were breaking the silos within one institution. Mm-hmm.
Who's coming in? You said 30 people. Who are these people?
So wound care, mm-hmm. podiatry, vascular surgery, IC, IR, infectious disease, wound care nurses in the hospital. I try to bring in everyone, mm-hmm. RBTs, MAs, nurses, and it's really the free lunch that brought them.
Yeah, of course. Now, were these... what cases, because I'm thinking some people out there that are like, wow, that's a great idea. Maybe I should start that. Mm-hmm. How did you select the cases? Was it wins? Was it lose, you know, shitty cases that we should have done better? Or was it pre any decision so that we can come together and do the best for the patient moving forward?
A little bit of both, but mostly pre. Like, this is why it was monthly. This is a challenging patient that we're doing vascular interventions on. You're seeing them in wound care and they're not getting any better. What are the next steps? So it's really pre, like, what are the next steps to save this limb? And then
people that were like, I'm just thinking, because it sounds like I face these decisions weekly, mm-hmm. to hold for a month to have a discussion sometimes can be not practical, I guess, but
yeah.
Remember, maybe these were
only 3 cases per month. I mean, I waited till the end. You have to make decisions throughout that month.
Right. So, yeah. But it's almost like it should happen every week.
Oh, for sure.
If you could have it your way, you would probably do a weekly thing to do this. You guys have your weekly thing, but it's a little siloed. No,
it's siloed. I'm trying to organize a conference, but, you know, it would be just the physicians, but I love the idea of bringing more people. But I've gotten some resistance because it's difficult to coordinate all these people. Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably very worthwhile. And my idea initially was to have everyone, like you're saying, wound care, the ultrasound tech, everybody that can come in. But it's a little bit of a daunting task to have find a time and a place where everybody can come, or a majority of people can come.
Yeah, I think the secret sauce is obviously the lunch, but it's every week, no matter what, same location, same time. And here's what you get.
Consistency.
Yes. Yeah. You get emotional buy-in. Because now these people see the story and now they care. Now an ultrasound tech gets a CLTI patient on the table, and they understand the multidisciplinary process of these patients, or all the people contributing to the care, but you get emotional buy-in.
Yeah. I do think that, I've, this well, we've been pushing this agenda for a long time in Houston. We had our toe and flow rounds, and that was a very interesting concept because we brought people from all the hospitals. We thought it was a good way to try to cross-pollinate and maybe inform, and maybe it was our way from our own program to say, hey guys, this is what we're doing here. So if you guys are in your hospital and you're not having these results, consider bringing the patients here, because I think that works for us. But at a more practical and unique level, let's say your facility, Lucas, what I have learned through Jill is that it should not be only physician focused.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because you think somebody like a wound care nurse or an RBT is going to come in on day one and have all these things to say. But I will tell you that the moment that they understand they matter, yeah, the moment that they understand the disease, because you've just, all these people have never been given the opportunity to learn. Yeah. And a lot of these people want to learn.
Yeah.
They just don't have that area or that spot to do it. And the moment that they understand, kind of like, I get it, and I understand my part of this, within time, they're going to come out of their shell and they're going to become ever more involved, ever more inclusive. And then you're going to realize that these people help you get through your day in a much efficient way.
Yeah.
Because that's something that now that we're, at Hope Vascular and Podiatry in Houston, we one of the things is I said, Jill, you have to work with me, even if it's a little bit of every so often, because I want you to bring these techs in to realize how valuable they are and to realize what they can do. And for example, I'm here at a meeting and a tech now has a patient and they're going to have a lot more to say and to add. And now I'm getting text messages from both of our techs sometimes about, hey, I can't find this or I can't find that. And I think this is going to be important for you. So I'm going to go ahead and do this. I'm going to do a vein mapping of the both lower extremities because you may need vein.
Like, awesome.
How amazing is that, right? Yeah. That they're getting to the point where, because otherwise before, if the CPT code wasn't there, they don't care. That's not what you asked me to do. No, I want you to be an independent thinker. Yeah. I want you to come out and I want you to, but that goes for MAs, that goes for nurse practitioners, that goes for all these other people on the team that now realize the importance of what they have to add to the case.
Yeah.
Now, you're involved in SVU. Right? The Society of Vascular Ultrasonography, correct? I know that you're coming out of now the leadership, you're kind of finished your tenure, if you may. How easy has it been? Because it sounds like a dream to go and make ultrasound techs part of the team. Sounds like the obvious thing to do, but there's some resistance, I'm thinking. And I'm thinking, here's me trying to steel man the other side of this coin, which is, you don't pay me enough for me to have to deal with all this, right? I mean, you're already asking me to do 30 ultrasounds a day.
Yeah.
You're already asking me to put all this in. Now you want me to come to the session thing that you're not paying me to do. And you're asking me to go the extra mile and get me out of my comfort zone to try to become part of a team. And maybe I don't even care, okay? So there's a misalignment of incentives that essentially is crushing to your dream of having the RBT be part of every CLTI team. So through your leadership at SVU, through what seems to be some pretty obvious hurdles to make it happen, is there opportunity or walk me through where you're at, what have you found, and where, if any, is the path to more involvement?
Well, I think just being a vascular tech is just a foundation. Now what we're seeing is there's a lot of pathways for vascular technologists to go. They can go to industry. they can become more specialized like myself in CLTI. There are techs that are now into research for other industry companies of early device development. They can be educators. So it's no longer just techs having to scan in a dark room. And so what I would like to do is start to empower some of these techs to find their pathway. You know, my desire and what brings me happiness is what we're doing together, where we can think about, thinking outside the box and doing what's right for the patient in a multidisciplinary approach, where another tech might really find joy in educating young vascular technologists. So I think SVU, that's a really nice launching point for vascular technologists to find their pathway for what makes them happy.
Because we've had a lot of problem with retention.
Yes.
A lot of problem with retention. Obviously, one of them is pay, and I totally support people going where they are valued. So I have no problem with that. But what could, somebody like me do to create an environment where somebody wants to stay, even though like they might maybe earn a little less and then going to some other place, but what can we do as surgeons to help, ultrasound technologists find fulfillment in what they do?
Mm-hmm. I think you said it earlier, they want to feel like they matter. And so whether that's bringing into, and we didn't even talk about it, I built this interdisciplinary program for AV fistula. Like there's so many different avenues that a tech, whatever they're interested in, you got to bring them in and make them feel relevant. But I want to bring up something also interesting is I believe through HOPE Academy that we should build up a vascular ultrasound tech fellowship. Mm.
Yeah, that's something that we've been talking about, which how important it is to get the word out. And when we developed HOPE, one of the main things was we need to train, and we need to find a way to train a lot of people that will not find the normal avenue because there's no CLTI Academy for vascular technologists. It just doesn't exist in America. And so one of the things that we did is we carved out of our entire floor, there's a large educational room that's connected essentially to the cath lab. So there's an 8-foot window. It's a viewing window where you can sit down. There's 30 seats, kind of stadium seats. And so you get to be part of that. But there's also a 75-inch screen, and there's other things that are going to make it a very easy place. And obviously, in my mind, hey, we're going to bring in courses. We're going to bring in, and Jill, rightfully so, said, man, this would be perfect for what we've been thinking about, bringing techs and teaching them. And I think that that's really important. I do think that we, and that's a little bit of a harder piece, but I do think that our professional societies need to do better at getting our ultrasounds better paid, right? Mm-hmm. If you think about, you're saying it, right? Retention's hard. Why? Because we can't pay them enough. Because there's a cost structure, and ultimately, the allocation of resources is going to be very hard. Well, how can we make the vascular ultrasound produce more revenue? Mm-hmm. And if you're adding, we have this has been a very clear thing in the past, is you and I have modifiers of complexity, right? Yeah. When we're doing a redo intervention or when you're doing a bypass, we can add modifiers that then allow our billing services to be better. We don't have that in ultrasound. And I think that Jill, you're going to be influential in trying to push the agenda in Capitol Hill to try to get, CMS behind reimbursing certain facilities that do have this kind of certain center of excellence, if you may, that have these ultrasound techs that do more work, that do additional scanning, that instead of getting, let's say, a couple $100, that you could get $500 for that study. Because then that would allow me to say, hey, I'm going to raise my salaries and I'm going to really bring in talented people that are reimbursed, that feel part of the team. But I really think that that's an important way of doing it.
I totally agree. And to your point, it's hard to pay them more money when reimbursement's going down and we're asking them to do more work. Yeah. Like it used to be just 4 or 5 patients a day. I mean, I'm up to 12, 14 patients a day because I kind of have to. But I think that... that we're asking techs to do more work with this really long protocol. So think about if they went into a fellowship and they could critically think about everything that you wanted and be very efficient in their duplex ultrasound. But we have to make sure we're doing the IAC accreditation and following, insurance protocols, things like that. But I think there is room to to grow and maybe relook at the system.
And so I would invite techs that are out there, maybe stumbled on this podcast, to try to, you know, poke the bear, you know, gently find your way and or find places where you're going to be valued. Because I think there's more of us out there that are now seeking that. I think, Jill, I mean, you get constantly attacked by Twitter, you know, direct messaging of people trying to get training, people trying to learn more about these techniques.
It's a huge need.
Get yourself in the game. Make yourself presence. And at the end of the day, remember, it's all about showing up. I think that's important. And then on the other hand, for you surgeons, go today, go to work, open the dark room at the end of the corner, go and say hi, and pull them into your, you know, pull them in, you know, tell them you want to see what they, you know, what they saw, or show them an angiogram and show them maybe how something they read initially wasn't that, but teach them and find, create these moments where you can bring in the people from the team, because I really think there's a lot more that can happen from this collaboration. And I very happily put this picture that you took, Jill. Last time you were at Hope, you took a picture of the, like, the Hope team, like the dream Hope team, if you may. It was like a nurse practitioner, a podiatrist, MA, vascular technologist, and a, you know, vascular interventionalist, all in one room, all looking at the same foot, almost like it was one of these
powerful
old Harvard, you know, kind of images where there's all these, you know, guys looking at one single patient to learn. But I think that that's, we need to break that. We need to break that paradigm. We definitely need to work cohesively to try to get reimbursement aligned in a better way. But then also, I think there's creative ways in which you can, by the way, to your point, Lucas, is I think if there's a will, there's a way. It's harder with institutions, academic institutions, because right now I think I can be much more versatile, right? If I need to pay my tech a little bit more because I'm going to get quality, I'm going to feel happily about that. But then I'm going to do something like Jill said, hey, let's do a course.
Yeah,
let's get some funds from education. Let's get some funds from some research stuff that we can do. Maybe we can get an extra grant. And then you use that extra grant money to pay your techs a little bit more money. And I think that's the way to build a team.
How can, because I've seen your like beautiful pre-operative ultrasound images, and basically you're giving like a roadmap before like somebody goes, and I'm like, damn, how the hell do I get that? You know, how, because to your point, like people are very willing to learn. People want to learn. Like that's the great thing about human beings. So is there a way to direct somebody that basically has some baseline knowledge, can do your standard ultrasound, but to really go in and to have somebody that has an interest to do like a really informative preoperative, you know, study, where does that person go to learn? If they're in the, you know, in, you know, somewhere in North Texas or something like that.
I think it's up to the physician to train them. I mean, I think this is why there's a need for education. But even outside of this, I was taught by the surgeons because they told me what they wanted. So anybody that's listening who's a physician, bring your tech in. Just like you said, take them to the cath lab. Take them even to an office visit. Like bring them in and tell them what you want. As far as the reporting, I had to think, I mean, I'm using an iPad. There's like a huge opportunity for AI advancement in technology. I mean, the structural reporting systems we have today are suboptimal. And I think I'm having to do things paper and pencil. I mean, I use an iPad, but there's no other way right now to convey what I see on ultrasound to put it into any report. So I think back to your question, I think it's really up to a physician champion to bring them in.
I do believe with this whole, you know, I think that we've said it before in different podcasts, but this whole frenzy, you know, best CLI and basal and all this, and people are like endo first or surgery first. And I've always told Jill, ultrasound first, man. Come on.
Yeah.
But then you get the amount of haters. It's crazy. I'm telling you, there's people like, why would you ever do an ultrasound in the, you know, in a times where a CTA and an MRA and all these
below the knee? What are you talking about?
It's just
ridiculous.
Well, MRAs, you can make a Trisha Roy would attack you with a pit bull. But but no, I'll just say I think there's just a lot of more functional things that come from the ultrasound, imagery wise, and it doesn't stop in the diagnostic. It goes into your room. You can't pull an MRI room into the OR to help you navigate. You can't determine at the end of the case if your pedal acceleration time is improved, if the delta is enough for what that patient needs. Do you need to do a second vessel arch revascularization? And then for follow-up. So, I mean, come on. There's so many places that you can insert this technology that it's rather ridiculous to hear people nowadays thinking that this is passé or that. Now, I will say, you know, sometimes I go to the hospital, I have absolutely no control, and some of the ultrasounds that I get are trash.
Yeah.
When you have no control, no oversight, no quality, and it's not about being a certified lab or not, it's about do you have the right people doing the right images for you? And I hope that we can evolve in this way. I think we're going to be around for a while, hopefully, Jill, Lucas. And I think that we need to keep talking about this. We need to be putting it out there. Mm-hmm. We need to get Hope Academy operational with the courses for techs.
How about courses for physicians that want to, like, so if I need to be the physician's champion, then I need to learn from you. So what do I do? Where do I go to learn pedal acceleration time technique and have it nailed down so I can come by and teach?
Well, actually at 4 p.m., there is going to be a certification course here at Handolat where you should go. It's right here. So don't go off and venture in your cocktail little tours. Go and sit down and be certified by the Handolat. No, but in all realism, what if there's somebody out there, I want to learn about PAT, this pedal acceleration, which, by the way, we could do an entire whole show, and we're probably going to invite you to talk about PAT at another time. I guess we went into the team approach creation. But anyway, if there is somebody peaked in knowing, let's be more broad, understanding pedal duplex, because I think that PAT is just a part of the whole thing, which is understanding the anatomy of the foot, deep diving into the branches of importance, knowing about not only the arterial, but the venous side. Now in a world where arterializations are becoming a very important part of the tool. Joe, what would you, anybody out there wants to learn about pedal duplex? Do you have where to send them?
It's going to be Hope Academy. I mean, right? I feel like I'm pretty approachable. So a lot of people just call me and I teach online with Zoom all around the world. So there has to be some formal education around it. I do a lot of SVU. We just had a hands-on. I mean, we try, but it definitely needs some formal structure for sure.
Jill also calls me out on it. She's like, you're talking about PAT. You don't know how to do it. And I was like, I know how to do it. I mean, I don't know if I can grab the ultrasound and do the whole thing, but I'm slowly getting there.
Yeah, because, you know, if we're talking about, it's going to be very difficult, at least for somebody like me, to have an ultrasound tech come into my room for every single angiogram. So it's up to me. So I want to know how to do it. So I can, when I do my angio, I just put the hockey stick and it's like, okay, I'm done.
Well, see, and it's not only with hockey sticks. So you see, there's already a conceptual problem that you need to fix. Yeah.
Do you know there's 50 doctors signed up for this certification?
No way.
Yes.
51.
That's amazing.
Great. 52. I will be certified too. It's important. Well, I'm not surprised. We were talking about this, I think, offline, but the RVT concept is not global. And in Mexico in particular, it's the doctors that do the ultrasounds. Vascular surgeons or radiologists, more typical. So they scan and they produce a report, but they don't have anybody doing images ahead of time. So anyway, if you're interested and you want to do something fun, mark your calendar, September 2024. I'm sure we could twist Jill's arm enough to come one more time to Mexico. Even though, by the way, I thought you weren't coming. Last time you literally told me, I'm not making it to Handolat, and I was like, that's fine, no worry, it is what it is. Because I understand the amount of shit that we all have on our plates, and we're all traveling, and we're trying to have our lives. And so I was like, okay, fine. And then I see her on the damn agenda. So I go, and I'm like, hey, she's not coming, remove her. Yeah. And so then everybody, and they're like, no, she is coming. So what? Why? What?
I love coming here.
You know, you get FOMO?
A little bit, yeah, a lot. I mean, the people are, I mean, I love coming here. I did have FOMO, so I couldn't miss out.
Well, hopefully a lot of more people get FOMO. And if you're interested, just follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And we'll on a pretty regular basis, we'll refer to Handolat on our pod. But keep it on your agenda, 2024, September.
Yeah.
But for now, I think that we will try to land this plane, and I appreciate you very much. So carving some time, coming and sharing with us, it means the world, and we always learn from you.
Thank you so much, Jill. Thank you.
Lucas?
Yeah. Vamos.
Vámonos. Pura vida. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hi. Yay. That was great.
No, so much. Pick up.